Welcome to AI at Work, a podcast which is part of the Tech Talks network. And in this podcast, we're going to venture into the transformative influence of artificial intelligence inside the workplace. And our discussions will focus on both the remarkable breakthroughs, but also the complex challenges of integrating AI into our everyday business functions and workflows. Have you noticed how every wave of technology seems to arrive with a lot of excitement, but equally a lot of confusion, and often a nagging sense that, have we seen this movie before? Well, today's conversation starts in New York. And this is an audio podcast, so you won't be able to see this, but my guest backdrop is framed by Broadway posters. And we'll quickly move into familiar territory for anyone who has lived through APIs, mobile, cloud, and now AI. Because my guest today is Oren Michaels. He's a founder and CEO of Bondor AI. And they are a builder who helped shape the API movement long before it was mainstream. And despite stepping away to produce Broadway shows, he's now pulled back in by what he sees as unfinished business in the world of enterprise AI. So today we can talk about why AI is still stuck in advisor mode, what agentic AI really means when software finally starts taking action, and why governance, security, and trust just a few of the things that need to move at the same speed as innovation. So if you're wondering why AI still feels powerful but underwhelming inside real workflows, this one's for you. But before I get my guest on today, I want to give a quick thank you to my friends at Denodo, because one of the questions I hear more and more from listeners on this podcast is, why does AI succeed or why does it fail? Now, most projects fail not because of the AI, but because the data foundation isn't ready. This is why organizations are increasingly turning to Denodo. So if you're ready to understand why your AI projects fail and how to succeed with AI, simply visit denodo.com and take control of your data world. But enough for me. Let me introduce you to my guest right now. So a massive warm welcome to the show. Can you tell everyone listening a little about who you are and what you do?
Sure. Great to be here. Thanks for having me on, Neil. I'm Oren Michaels. I'm the co-founder and CEO of a company called Bondor AI, based in New York City. And I have been a technology entrepreneur for a long time. Back in 2006, I noticed there was an opportunity to take these very technical sounding things called APIs and turn them into a way for businesses to grow and interact with each other and build larger businesses. But unfortunately, there was no technology, there was no ecosystem of technology providers to give you the tools you needed to expose these APIs. So I started a company called Mashery, and we brought API management into a place where business people and really anybody in a company could use APIs and turn it into something they would use to grow their business. Ran that company for 7 years and sold it to Intel, and was just enjoying being an angel investor and sitting on boards and producing Broadway shows. And a couple years ago, I started noticing that there was this move toward bringing AI into the enterprise, but we were having similar problems that really reminded me of the problems we had back in the API days. We had this great thing, ChatGPT. It was a chat interface, but it was really mostly useful for people who were, let's say, writing code. You could take all your bad code that didn't work, throw it into chat, and it would fix it for you, which is great. You talk to this brilliant PhD and it tells you what to do, which is lovely if you have that kind of job. But most people don't have the kind of job where they chat with a PhD. Most people actually use tools and do things. They interact with Salesforce. They create documents. They write emails. They do all kinds of things in their job. And the AIs out there really weren't able to do those tasks. And so we started looking at what it would take to allow AIs to safely and securely be trusted to go do these things. And what came out of that was this company, Bondor AI, that we started a bit over a year ago.
What a great story. And as you said there, you helped shape the API movement with Mesher, enjoying the shift to mobile and cloud. Then that period of producing Broadway shows there. But from that moment, it almost feels like there was a Godfather 3 moment, you know, where just when I think I'm out, they pull me back in. So, I mean, had those experiences influenced the way you see the current turn towards agentic AI and workflow automation for, hey, one last job?
Well, you know, it's funny. Part of having done this a few times is that you know, history does repeat itself when you see some patterns. So hopefully there are things that I, you know, screwed up last time around that I'll get right this time. I'm sure I won't get them all right, but it also, you know, it really helps you understand what kind of team you have to put together, what kind of, you know, what sort of service and support and involvement, you know, sophisticated enterprise customers need to deploy something like this, because we had to build that last time. You know, we had, in the API days, when I started the company, I thought it was going to be I had been at a small company myself. I thought it was going to be something that little companies would use to open APIs and big companies could come and work with them. And then the iPhone happened about 3 months after we started the company, and suddenly everybody needed a mobile strategy. And pretty much overnight, we went from serving little startups to serving Walmart and Best Buy and the New York Times and all these amazing companies around the world. And I learned pretty quickly what was involved in doing that. And so hopefully this time we get to have the benefit of that experience.
And one of the things that you said is that AI is still stuck in advisor mode. That was something I found when I was doing a little research on you. And I completely agree. But when did you first realize that real change would come only when AI began taking real action rather than just summarizing information? And we're starting to see this with the future of agentic AI that everyone's talking about now. But when did you first notice this?
Well, people started talking about agentic AI. And when I started digging into what they meant by agentic AI, they either meant things like customer service chatbot agents, which certainly are things and they're lovely and they can be very helpful, but that's not what we really had in mind. And then they would start talking about, well, you can have an agent that will go out and, you know, pull in a bunch of data and summarize it for you. And that's not really what an agent does. If I have let's say I have a customer success agent, they actually take actions. They do things. If I have an agent who is going out and talking to customers, they will log that their calls in Salesforce. They will actually take actions. And so for me, I sort of summarized it as, if an AI isn't actually writing something or impacting something, all it's doing is gathering information and turning it over to a human with some suggestions of what to do. In my book, that's not really being agentic. That's just being a chatbot. Yes. It's, you know, you can be very sophisticated at that. And we had a trend, you know, 6-7 years ago of robotic process automation or RPA. And a lot of these so-called agentic workflows really are just rewarmed RPA and not nearly as interesting as they could be. What I look at it and I say, okay, I'm a human and I use AI to hopefully make myself a bit more productive. And I automate certain things I do. And that's great. That's interesting. And it's hopefully useful and maybe is productive for my company. But what's really interesting is when we get to a place where, because of what AI can do and what these agents can do and the tools they have access to, they can actually do things that humans can't do. It's not just a faster Orin, but it's doing things that Orin can think of wanting to be able to do, but could not possibly get done in any rational period of time without something that can actually take action and do things. And as those use cases come into the enterprise, we're going to see some really amazing growth and some amazing productivity enhancements, and hopefully businesses will grow because of it.
And throughout 2025, we did hear a lot of talk around AI productivity. And yet on the flip side of that, many leaders were still scratching their heads, wondering why they weren't seeing ROI on their investment, why they weren't coming out of test into production, why they wasn't seeing outcomes that matched the hype. So what patterns did you see behind that frustration? Was it that's a certain amount of bandwagon jumping or not focusing on the problem first and going tech first, or was it something else?
Well, it is something of that ilk. It's, okay, we have to have AI. Okay, well, which one? We'll use ChatGPT. We'll use Anthropic. Okay, great. We'll get that and we'll put it out there. And nobody knew what to do with it. That basically, if you, you know, I still talk to, I was in a cab yesterday and the cab was like, well, what should I use AI for? And we started talking about it and he finally came up with some really great ideas of what, you know, a New York City cab driver could do with it. But it's, you know, just by putting a tool out there doesn't mean you're going to start really understanding what to do. You need to have examples. And you also need to be someone who is good at explaining to someone, whether it's a human someone or an artificial someone, what to do, how to do it, and what the work product is that you want. And, you know, if you look at a lot of people who work in, you know, in knowledge worker jobs, they may be great individual contributors, but they may not have the skill of saying, okay, I've got this task, I've got this job, I'm going to break it down into things and be able to tell someone who's super smart and super energetic, but doesn't really know and have context exactly what I want. And that skill and being able to, you know, we have been trained to call that prompt engineering, but it's more than that. It's more than just engineering the prompt. It's actually being able to understand and be one of those humans who's able to sort of dissect a business problem and turn it into a set of instructions that someone can go do. And the fact that you give people this powerful AI doesn't mean they're going to get stuff done with it any more than if you give, you know, an individual contributor, you say, okay, look over there, you've got 6 interns, go put them to work and make you more productive. They may or may not know how to do that.
And a lot of people have likened it to the iPhone moment, but I would argue it feels more like the App Store moment. Do you remember when the App Store launched, but every iPhone app was turn your, I don't know, your phone into a pint of beer or a flute or a chainsaw. It wasn't until developers had a bit of time with it and thought, okay, well, we've had a bit of fun. Now, what real problems can we solve? It feels very similar to that, doesn't it?
Very similar. And it's, you know, I'll even take it back a step further. So you're absolutely right. And, you know, at Mashery, we were fortunate the iPhone came out and that sort of turned us into a catalyst for a lot of mobile apps. So we got to see a lot of, you know, good ones. And it turns out a mobile app that actually does anything generally needs an API to talk to, right? Yeah. That's sort of what made our business. But, you know, right now we're sort of in this phase where you have these chat clients that are mostly text. And yeah, they can put some pictures up and you can do some things. But we just learned that ChatGPT and, you know, OpenAI released an SDK to put little iframe apps in their chat interface. And they're kind of kludgy, they're kind of wonky, but it's a step in that direction. To me, it reminds me of when Flash came out. Mm. So you had the websites and suddenly they became, quote, rich media and they had interaction and things like that. But it was all really tough because you had to be running this Flash thing that was kind of weird. And you know, eventually people figured out how to actually extend the power and the capability of both browsers and servers and the languages and all those things to turn them into the rich sites that we have now. And I think we're sort of in that moment. People don't know what to do. And they want to make sure that these apps are deployed with the proper guardrails, with safety, so they don't go running amok and doing things they shouldn't do. And you know, that is a step in the direction that I think will evolve fairly quickly and we'll see a significant evolution over the course of the next 12 months.
And I was also reading that you describe a coming moment when AI agents could actually outnumber human employees. The prospect of that makes me a little bit nervous from a security point of view. But how should leaders be rethinking workforce management when digital entities begin to operate across so many different core systems with speed and scale that humans cannot match? And we all have our own agent almost working on our behalf.
Well, agents, plural. And I think that, you know, part of it is there's not going to be one single AI to rule them all in any organization, right? Just as we hire different kinds of humans to do different jobs, there are going to be different AIs, different agentic platforms that are particularly good at doing things. But I'll take it a step further, which is that it's all also about trust, that if you want to have an agent that is going to go do something particularly that involves writing into your systems of record or talking to a customer or, you know, these sorts of things, you're not going to have a single all-seeing, all-acting agent. You're going to create something that has significantly narrow guardrails that it can't get out of, that it will go do the task at hand, and it may hand that task off to a different agent who has its own guardrails. But ultimately, you want to, these agents are non-deterministic. They do their best to act within how they interpret the instructions they're given. And so by narrowing these things down and making it so that I might have the agent that logs my call after I talk to you and takes my notes, so if we talk again, I remember what it is, that might be a different agent than the one that logs a call with a prospect. That would be a different agent than the one that goes through all of my salespeople's pipelines and, you know, perhaps asks them questions about the status of various deals. Each of these things will act differently. I don't think that in the near term, we'll just have, here's Oren's agent. It just sort of sits next to him and does all the things he wants it to do and never screws up and never embarrasses him. And, you know, that just, I think we have a bit of time to get there.
A quick thank you to the sponsor that supports every podcast across the Tech Talks network and every episode. Because their help allows me to publish 60 interviews a month with founders and technologists who are keeping this industry moving. And this month, I'm partnering with Alcor. And if you've ever tried to hire engineers in another country, you probably know just how painful it can be. Different laws, patchy support, and partners who don't truly understand engineering roles. So Alcor approaches this from a different tech point of view. They specialize in Eastern Europe and Latin America, and they're able to combine EOR capabilities with recruiting. So you get one partner handling everything, and they help you choose the best location for your stack, find developers with the right depth of experience, and run proper assessments so they can onboard people quickly. And they also give you a model that respects both transparency and margin. Most of your spend goes directly to your engineers, and the fee will decrease as the team expands. And you can even transition everyone in-house at that time when you're ready, without having to worry about a penalty. And that structure is why a mix of early stage and unicorn stage companies use them as they scale. So if you want to take a look, visit alcor.com/podcast or tap on the link in the show notes. But now, on with today's show.
And bring your own device, we both remember clearly, I think, yes, shaped an entire era of corporate security and governance. Then came shadow IT. Yep. I'm curious, looking back at these things, what parallels do you see with bring your own AI?
Especially? Bring your own AI is a thing, and people are doing it all the time. And the parallels, it comes down to, let's leave aside intentional bad actors, because that's not what this is. This is people who want to get their job done. They want their company to compete with their competitors more effectively. They want to do a good job. They see this technology out there and they say, gosh, if I had access to this, I could be a whole lot more effective. And so, you know, we've all seen it a bunch of times. Let's go back to, you know, mobile email, right? The BlackBerry came out and the security people are, we will not have mobile email. That's not secure. And the sales guys are like, I'm sorry, I need to hit my number and my competitors have this. So they would just go and put down a credit card and bring BlackBerry and you know, sort of dare IT to say, no, you can't use it. And then, you know, that's how wireless internet came in. We always wanted to be able to sit down at a conference table and be on our laptop and look something up. And so we would put a Wi-Fi access point in the conference room, even though IT was like, oh my God, that's not secure. And you know, and on and on and on. So now we have AI. And a lot of the initial, those, you know, 50 or whatever percent of bad AI proofs of concept, they would basically give you AI, but nerf it to a point where if you wanted to get anything done, you had to go outside. And the challenge with narrowing this down, and we see it in agentic AI as well, we see, all right, we'll give you MCP, which is the protocol I'm sure we'll talk about. We'll give you MCP, but it's read-only. Well, then it can't do anything. If you insist that nothing bad can happen, you're also insisting that nothing good can happen. And so people will go right around that. They'll set up their own MCP. They'll just go directly in with the API. There's all kinds of things you can do when you bring your own AI. And the bottom line is if IT wants to actually be a catalyst and a facilitator of of growth and innovation and good things happening, smart risks need to be taken, and you have to give people the ability to use these tools or they're going to go figure it out themselves.
And we are at that time of the year where everyone's starting to think about what's going to dominate 2026. And you used an acronym there, Technology Loves a Good Acronym, MCP. And no, we're not talking about Microsoft Certified Professional.
No, we are not. Though I did hear that the other day. It is a thing, I'm told.
Yeah, it used to be. But obviously, the Model Context Protocol is what I'm talking about, the connective layer for AI workflows across systems in everything like Salesforce and Snowflake. So what excites you about this shift? What do enterprises need to understand as they open these connections? Because I do expect throughout the year, we're going to hear MCP more and more, aren't we?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so MCP is a amazing thing. It, conveniently for us, again, you know, last company I did, we started doing APIs and then the iPhone came out. This time, about a month after we incorporated and cashed our first, you know, Series seed check, MCP comes out, which is great because it gives you a scaffold and a protocol around which AIs can sort of understand the tools that they have at their disposal and know how to use them. And so if you ask an AI to go do something and it has access to some universe of MCP tools, it can go out and say, okay, well, it's like you sort of, you got something to do in your house, you go to your garage, you see what tools you got, and you go, okay, I'll grab that screwdriver over there and it'll work and I know how to use it. If I need instructions, it's right there. These MCPs in turn generally hook up to some sort of an API. So you have Salesforce exposes their API, you layer MCP in front of that, and the MCP sort of interprets that API, for lack of a better word, for the AI. So what's great about this is it really simplifies the process of explaining to an AI what tools it has and what it can go do. But what it doesn't do, it doesn't secure them, it doesn't limit them, it doesn't keep track of who's doing what to whom. It doesn't ensure that the AI even uses the right tool. And the challenge with it is, you know, so it's like, here's a pipe, but there's no governance, there's no analytics, and critically, there's no sort of directing the AI with what it should do. So if you open, let's say, Salesforce MCP to an AI, and maybe you use ours so that it actually provides the ability to write, since most of them are read-only, you have this universe of tools at your disposal. Well, let's say you also then turn on the HubSpot MCP and you turn on the Google Drive MCP. Well, now you've got all these massive quantities of tools. And when you ask chat to go and do something that happens in Salesforce, the first thing it does is it pulls in every single one of these tools and analyzes it essentially. And by the time it has done that, it has consumed hundreds of thousands of tokens, and it generally runs out of space before it even does anything for you. Mm. And so what we've had to build is what we call Tool IQ. It basically understands the context of what the AI is trying to do, and it only shows it the tools it should. So rather than saying to it, please go look up, you know, the IBM account in Salesforce, and it starts by saying, I'll check Google Drive to see if it knows anything about it. It won't do that. And so there's all kinds of things that enterprises can use to manage this MCP access to make sure that it is cost-effective, it actually works, people can get stuff done, and it's secure. So for instance, I am allowed to go to Salesforce and delete an opportunity. I have that privilege. But my AI should not have that privilege. Even though I'm allowed to, I know it's stupid. And I know that if I do it too often, I'll probably get fired. My AI, if I say to it, you know, go, you know, clean up these opportunities and you know, give me a report, it might say, well, clean up, what does that mean? Okay, I'll get rid of them, that'll do, right? And so it's more than identity, it's more than API management, it's sort of a new paradigm of a combination of security, making sure bad things don't happen from outside actors, and governance to manage the pros and cons and quirks of each of the agents and each of the humans that are involved.
And I was also reading before you joined me today that you often argue that governance must serve as a launch pad rather than a break. Again, completely agree. But
absolutely.
What does good governance look like when an agent is probabilistic, capable, and operating inside production environments? Because it will make some people nervous.
Oh, it will. It will, absolutely. And, you know, you look at your self-driving cars right now, right? So you have your self-driving cars, but most of them still require you to hold the steering wheel. Got to have your eyes on the window. If you don't do that, it's going to get angry at you, right? It's kind of the same thing here. You want to narrow the edge cases, right? And make sure that essentially when you ask the agent to go do something, that it has guardrails that allow the things that are consistent with doing that thing and disallow everything else. You know, some people call it least privilege, right? It's how do you make sure, and this is again why you're going to have lots and lots of different agents, because depending on what they are for each context, least privilege will look differently, right? And so from my standpoint, what it is governance is make sure the agent has the capability of doing the things that are consistent with the job at hand and nothing else. Mm. And what you often do is you don't even give it those privileges at first. You first say, I'm giving you no privileges, go do these things. And you actually watch the MCP and see, okay, are the attempts that the agent is making consistent with what doing that job looks like? Well, if so, then okay, we'll open that up and we'll let it go do them.
And you often say the core question is not how the model was trained, but what will it do with the access right now? And how should enterprise build a repeatable way to test, measure, and trust agents before they touch real customer data and revenue systems? We've kind of, I would hope most enterprises have learned the lesson through not measuring things. That's how they ended up with no ROI. But now we're in firm IT territory, aren't we? Testing, measuring, et cetera.
Well, they're certainly, depending on how dangerous a thing is that you're doing, how catastrophic it could be, certainly sandboxes are lovely things and testing is great. But we're actually, it's interesting to see that a lot of the customers we're dealing with are actually fairly high secure financial institutions and other folks that want this to be running, want MCP and want our governance to be running on-premise or in a private cloud, which we're capable of doing, because they do see that opportunity. But if they're going to go do that, they very much need to ensure that the outcomes that can happen are very, very limited, are tracked, and are accessing things in a way that they can be undone if bad things happen.
And I think that is a powerful moment to end on. But before I do let you go, anyone interested in exploring the world of AI, APIs, and MCPs, so many acronyms there, but they want to make sense of it. Where should they go to find out more information about all things Barndoor AI?
So we are at barndoor.ai, and you can come and see all the stuff we're doing and check it out.
Awesome. Well, I'll add links to absolutely everything, make it easy for people just to click and pop over. But before I let you go, I've got to ask, obviously you've got quite an eclectic mix of experience here, and I love how you're frequenting the worlds of entertainment, stage, Broadway, and technology. How do these worlds collide for you? Is there any lessons you've learned along the way? Is there any crossover there?
Oh, there's tons of crossover. There's tons of crossover because, not, you know, bringing technology to a fairly traditional and not, you know, Broadway's a funny place. There are some parts of it that are incredibly sophisticated. If you go to a Broadway stage and you go under the stage, they've basically built an entire data center there, right? It is incredible because all the lighting and video and sound, these are all highly, highly technical and computerized, and they do incredibly sophisticated things. And then on the business side, they're pushing paper, right? And it's really interesting to see that what the audience sees is often very, very sophisticated, but what's backstage is very, very traditional. And I've worked with some of my favorite, you know, longtime producing partners to really help them reimagine that in a way that makes everybody a bit more efficient. But it's also, you know, it's all about storytelling. You know, if you want to see a great show, someone you know, you arrive feeling a certain way, and the cast and crew's job is to have you leave feeling a different way. And if I'm pitching a venture capitalist, or I'm talking to a customer, or I'm on a panel at a trade show, it's all part of that.
Well, I love chatting with you today, and I will urge everyone listening to check out barndoor.ai. Anyone, especially if you're interested in having complete visibility and control over how AI accesses your enterprise data through MCP connections, and that phrase alone you will hear a lot in 2026. And I think maybe we should get you back on later in the year and learn more about the entertainment side and your Broadway life there too. But thanks for joining me today.
Great. Thanks, Neil.
Wow. One of the many things I really enjoyed in this conversation today was how we connected past tech cycles with what is unfolding right now. We have been here many times, and the older I get, the more I realize that everything happens in cycles. And whether it's APIs and mobile to MCP and agentic workflows, or that AI is actually doing things, I think my guest brought a very grounded perspective on what it takes to move from demos to dependable outcomes. So I will include links to Barndoor AI so you can all dig a little bit deeper in how governance, access and control fit into the next phase of enterprise AI. And as always, this episode was about asking better questions, not selling easy answers. So hopefully it's helped you rethink how AI could operate inside real businesses. Your business. Please, if you think it'll be useful, share it with someone who is wrestling with similar challenges. And more than anything, though, thank you for listening and stopping by. And I urge you to check out techtalksnetwork.com. We have 9 shows, over 4,000 interviews with yours truly there, and a whole heap of names in every industry you can imagine. But I hope you enjoyed today's episode, and I hope to speak with you again on AI at Work very soon. Bye for now.